And of most Afghan-produced opium and heroin. Carol Vandem, NPR News, Washington.
President Bush has expanded sanctions against individuals and organizations linked to Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe. Mr. Bush called the move a direct result of the regime's use of politically motivated violence. Randy Pausch, who drew worldwide acclaim for his best-selling book, The Last Lecture, has died. A computer science professor at Carnegie Mellon University, Pausch was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 2006. The often upbeat and philosophical Pausch shared his story and insights through his book and lectures since being diagnosed. He died early today at his home in Virginia. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Wallace Foundation, whose Knowledge Center is where education leaders can go to learn about improving teaching and learning. Downloads at wallacefoundation.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Programs on WILL are made possible in part by the 6th Annual Sugar Creek Symphony and Song, presenting Donizetti's The Elixir of Love, August 1st through the 3rd, in the renovated Art Deco Watsika Theater in Watsika, Illinois, an opera about love, money, and a magic potion. More information at sugarcreekfestival.org.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, hour number two of our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Kyle Mabry is at the controls this morning. In this hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the Roma. These people may well be the most marginalized minority in Europe, and arguably they are Europe's largest stateless people. Discrimination against them goes back hundreds of years and continues to the present day, fueled in part in many countries by anti-immigrant sentiment. They have experienced a variety of violence. They have been attacked and enslaved. Roma women have undergone forced sterilization. People have had their children taken away. And in other sorts of ways, governments had tried to force the Roma to assimilate. In this part of Focus, we'll be talking about the Roma, something about this struggle that they have been going through now for perhaps centuries, a struggle to maintain their identity. And our guest for the program is Erica Schlager. She serves as counsel for international law at the U.S. Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. She joined the commission staff in 1987. She follows OSCE and international legal issues, among them the human rights situation of the Romani minority. She's joining us this morning by telephone. Questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to join the conversation, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good. Anywhere that you can hear us, if you'd like to join in that way, you can do that by calling 800-222-9455. So at any point here, questions are certainly welcome. All we ask of people calling in is that people just try to keep their comments and questions brief, just so that we can keep moving. But anyone who is interested in joining the conversation is welcome to do that. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Ms. Schlager, hello.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
How many, and I guess I know this is a difficult question to answer, but if we're just talking about Europe, and we know that there are Roma people living in the United States and in Latin America and so forth, but just if you talk about Europe, how many people are we talking about?
Well, a couple of years ago, the European Union Parliament had a resolution on the situation of Roma, and they estimated that there were 12 to 15 million Roma in the European Union countries. And I think that's a good ballpark estimate.
Mm-hmm. But as I suppose it's possible that there could be more. I think what seems to be true is that often Roma people just think maybe they're better off just keeping their heads down. And so having an accurate count may be a little bit difficult.
I think it's extremely difficult. And I think that number is intended to be a good faith estimate. It's not based on the census data because all the people who look at the situation of Roma agree that it doesn't matter what country you're looking at, if they collect information on the number of Roma, that number of official census data will be your floor. That's going to be the lowest number you start to work with. And then experts will say, okay, we know this is off. Is it off by a factor of 10, 50, you know, and you sort of go from there.
And if you, say, ask a question like, if you look at standard measures of well-being that governments might use to try to talk about how people are doing, how then would you answer a question like, well, in Europe, these 12 to 15 million people, how are they doing?
Well, I think that they are not doing well. I think by many measures, you know, if you think of things like life expectancy, infant mortality, levels of impoverishment, levels of illiteracy, they do across the board extremely poorly. A couple of years ago, the United Nations Development Program looked at several Central European countries and determined that the standard of living for Roma communities in several of those countries were equivalent to what the UN normally sees in sub-Saharan Africa. So it's quite at variance at what one finds for the majority populations in Europe.
Just, I think that our interest in discussing this topic, I think it simply was from reading recent stories that come out of Italy about that had to do with attacks against Roma. And it seems that maybe it's just that I'm reading the wrong sources. And if you read, particularly if you read European media, maybe you're going to see more news about Roma. But I guess I don't recall really having seen much mention of them before this at all.
David, I think that there is often the reporting on Roma is not as much as I personally would like to see. And unfortunately, a lot of media reporting does reflect broader societal biases, and that's a real problem, particularly in, you know, when you get to the local press out in Romania or Bulgaria, you can see stuff that would make your hair stand on end. In 2004, in eastern Slovakia, there were essentially what were race riots. They were large upheavals by the Romani population there. It required the largest mobilization of armed forces that Slovakia had experienced since the Velvet Revolution in 1989. And when that happened, there was sort of one short paragraph in the New York Times. I think there was a blurb in The Economist. But otherwise, it went largely unremarked upon. So media coverage really is I would say, something where we'd love to see some improvements. And I appreciate your having this focus today.
Well, it certainly does seem to the things that I have seen. It certainly does seem that the sort of the standard catalog of racist stereotypes that have been applied to many different marginalized people certainly get applied to the Romani, and it just seems to be the same story that's been written over and over again, and just applied to it on yet another group of people.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And you know, I have to say, when I came to the job that I have now, and you mentioned I've been here since 1987, so it's been a while. This was not a minority group that I personally knew anything about. But in the early 1990s, when we started to see the transformation, the in many ways very positive transformations in Eastern Europe, I was shocked to see that some of the losers in the democratic transformation were the Roma. When the controls on speech came off, they were absolutely targeted by the worst kind of racist invective. There were pogroms against them in Romania. Quite a large number between 1990 and 1997. They were stripped of citizenship in significant numbers in the Czech Republic. So there was a lot going on. And I'm happy that the leadership at our commission, I think, recognized early on that there were a lot of problems, and we've had a longstanding focus on those issues. And the current chairman of our commission, Alfie Hastings, went to Kosovo last year, made a point of visiting members of the Romani community there. The chairman and co-chairman, the co-chairman is Senator Ben Cardin, were in Prague and Bratislava earlier this year, made a point of raising concerns about Romani minorities in both of those countries. And the situation in Italy that you referred to, we've also followed quite closely. But you're absolutely right that there really is almost a lack of shame when it comes to what you can say about Roma, things that you couldn't say about other groups, people people say, it seems, without thinking about Roma.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that I have, in some of the things that I've read, seen a comment or comments some people have said that this was the last acceptable form of racism in Europe.
I think in many respects that's true, and I think it's important to ask the question, why would that be? And I think at least a partial answer can be found in our failure to understand the experiences of the Roma during the Holocaust. It is really not well, very little about the Romani history is known and understood. It's often not known that they were enslaved in Moldova and Romania until the 1860s. It's often not known that they suffered very severe forms of persecution in Europe in earlier centuries. And then during the Holocaust, they were targeted by the Nazis for genocide. And I think maybe as many as 500,000 Roma were murdered at that time. One of the things that didn't happen at the end of the Holocaust, and I want to quote here from the Council of Europe Human Rights Commissioner Thomas Hammerberg, who said, there was no genuine change of attitude among the majority population towards the Roma. And I think that's really part of the problem. And so when you look at some of the things people say today about Roma, where they say absolutely shock, or what is to me absolutely shocking racist things, they're often using phrases that were used by the Nazis themselves. But I think there's not the kind of understanding that this is sort of a Nazi way of looking at this minority group, and that's just been perpetuated without any real scrutiny or thinking, gee, maybe that's not, you know, if the Nazis did this, maybe there's something wrong with this.
Well, certainly it seems to be true that this experience, and as you rightly point out, there was, in addition to the Nazi effort to round up and kill Jews and homosexuals, there also the Roma were part of this as well. And I think that some people have said that one of the problems that Roma communities face today is that they never really recovered from this. And I don't imagine there was much, or maybe there was, I was going to say, I don't imagine there was much assistance offered to them after the war to try to recover. Certainly a lot of them died, and that no
right.
one really even knows maybe how many Roma there were before the Holocaust.
That's right. You know, many large Roma communities fell behind the Iron Curtain immediately at the end of World War II. And so, like Jewish communities, those people had a terrible time getting any kind of compensation or reparations for the suffering they had experienced. Even in Germany itself, although as much as two-thirds of Germany's Romani population was murdered, at the end of the war, German post-war restitution legislation and its implementation excluded, in practice, almost all Romani survivors. So almost no one in Germany who was Romani or Sinti was able to get any compensation. And those most directly responsible for actions against Roma escaped investigation, escaped prosecution, and escaped conviction. Several officials responsible for the deportations of Roma before and during World War II continued to actually have responsibility for Romani affairs. I mean, if you can imagine, you know, someone responsible for, you know, atrocities against Jews being left in charge of Jewish affairs after the war, that's sort of what was happening. And only a single person was ever convicted for wartime crimes against Roma, and his conviction only came in 1991. So there was a tremendous lag in looking at those issues and really understanding them and the impact that it had on Roma.
One of the things that certainly has happened is that over time, and this is not just recent, this goes back, I think, a long way, various states, various governments have tried to force the Roma people to assimilate. And they've done things, as I mentioned, they've done things like taking their children away. They have banned the use of the of their language. They have tried, you know, to do what they can to squash those things, distinct cultural practices of the Roma, that everything they can to, I suppose, in a sense, try to get the Roma to stop being Roma.
Yeah.
is that, and I have seen some references to things like that seemingly happening into the 20th century. Do states still have policies essentially that are aimed at pressing the Roma to stop being Roma?
Well, I think we have actually moved into a very different time now. We're at a very singular moment in history where democracy has spread across Europe in a way that it never has before. So that's one thing. We're looking at a very different context. We're looking at a time when technology has enabled Roma to work together across borders in a way that they never could before. One of the things that's really fascinating to me is that if you look at the history of Romani organizing, the history of Romani, the Romani civil rights movement, in essence, you can find Roma in Bulgaria, in the early part of the 20th century, speaking out for Romani rights. You can find Roma in Romania in the 1930s, arguing for Romani civil rights and arguing that Roma should be allowed to go to school. But all of these people were working across great distances at a time when they didn't have email. They didn't have the ability to organize in the way that they do today. And I think that's, while you certainly may have government officials that would like to deal with Roma through forced assimilation or like to make them stop being Roma, there is a pushback from Roma themselves that really makes it a different kind of undertaking.
Let me introduce again the guests for this hour of Focus 580. We're talking with Erica Schlager. She serves as counsel for international law at the U.S. Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. She joined the commission staff in 1987. She follows OSCE and international legal issues, and one of them is indeed the human rights situation of the Romani minority and also developments in Central Europe. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, do you, obviously, I'm not going to expect you to speak for these people, but to the extent that you know, the question is, how much do they want to assimilate, and to what extent, essentially, do they want to be a part of mainstream life in the countries where they live, and to what extent do you think they essentially would rather be left alone?
I think that's a great question, and it's one that I get a lot. And I think if you talk to Roma themselves, you might find different variations on the answer. So I can give you one perspective. If I go back, one of the things that I looked at not too long ago was a history of Roma in the Ottoman Empire. And part of what made that so interesting to me was that it looked at Roma in a part of Europe where they had their earliest migrations to that continent. And where you had tax records. One of the things that's hard for historians is that the historical record regarding Roma can be thin in some places compared to some other groups. But here you have these Ottoman tax records that are quite illuminating. And one of the things that it showed was that in the Ottoman Empire in the early years, you had Roma engaged in a fair number of different occupations and in many places in quite settled communities. And I think one of the things that this suggests to me is that when Roma have been allowed to settle and when they have been allowed to engage in diverse occupations, at least a significant number of them will do that. If you look historically, not only Roma but some other groups have engaged in itinerant occupations, horse trading, tinsmithing, wood carving, things that would take them on the road. As I say, Roma were not the only groups historically that did that. But those were also occupations that you had a market for in earlier centuries that you don't have a market for today. I think for the most part, Roma today want the same things for their children that you and I might want for ours. They want a good standard of living. They want the opportunity to send their children to school. Every Romani non-governmental organization that I have ever worked with has made education one of their top priorities. And I have to tell you, I was in Europe a couple weeks ago for a meeting on Romani issues, and I had a conversation with a European diplomat there And it was very interesting, one of his observations, very revealing. He was talking about Roma who are moving from some of the Eastern European countries into Western European countries with stronger economies. And at one point he said, he was talking about a locality where they had kept Roma from coming in. And he said, once they get their children enrolled in school, you'll never get rid of them. And I thought that was so illuminating for two reasons. First of all, it was sort of testimony, probably in a way he didn't intend, testimony to the desire of Roma to settle in one place. You know, you'll never get rid of them. They're permanence, in a sense. And then secondly, the connection to the schooling, that here, you know, how do they keep Roma in that locality from coming in and settling down? You keep their kids from getting into school. So it really was evidence to me of the efforts that Roma make sometimes in the face of incredible obstacles to get their children into school, even though there is a stereotype that Roma don't want to send their kids to school.
How successful have Roma been at getting involved in politics and having some sort of voice, perhaps a running candidates for whatever kind of legislative body they can, either on the local level or on the state level?
That's a really fascinating subject and one that is very much in flux. If you were to ask that question 10 years ago, you might get an extremely pessimistic answer because you'd had a little bit of a spike in the early 1990s, right after communism fell, with more Roma getting into parliaments, and then a drop-off. And so for a moment in time, the picture looked very grim. And I think we've started to see that reverse, partly because you see, if you really look to the local level or the regional level, that's where you're really starting to see many more Roma getting elected and serving in local governments or regional governments. And as we know in our country, that's often the springboard to national office. Certainly, at the national level, many governments now, particularly in Central Europe or countries with large Romani minorities, have set up offices that are at least tasked with looking at these issues. Many of them are still underfunded, have weak mandates, but it is an improvement to the situation a decade ago. And certainly at the international level, there are two Romani members of the European Union Parliament. They're outstanding individuals. Both of them happen coincidentally to be from Hungary. They represent different political parties. They're both women, as it happens. And I think they've really done a lot to make sure that Romani issues are heard and addressed at the European Union Parliament. But I would add one thing. A couple of years ago, this was back in 2001, the Hungarian Minister for Education made a statement that in that year, one-third of all the first graders in Hungary were Romani. And this speaks a little bit to the demographic situation. And I would sometimes go to folks afterwards and say, well, what do you, you know, if one-third of the kids in Hungary are Romani, what do you think they're going to be in 15 years? And usually I'd get kind of blank looks, maybe scared looks. And my answer is they're going to be first-time voters. And so that's really something for folks to think about in the long run, that you do have a number of countries with large Romani minorities, large enough to make significant voting blocks, should Romani voters become more organized and exercise that right.
Certainly, there are a lot of places in Europe that are experiencing a significant in-migration, people who are essentially who are economic migrants, who are looking for work and looking for the opportunity to have a decent job and make money and have a family, thing that everybody wants pretty much. And that has for some countries, for the more developed countries of Europe, obviously this is a challenge and also has been a cause of tension, just general kind of tension around immigrants and newcomers and outsiders. And I would expect that the Roma can get caught up in that. And I wonder whether, in fact, there's something in terms of discrimination, there's something special they face because they're Roma, or that somehow this is just part of a large, in many places, like what we saw in Italy, is part of this larger kind of tension around that very fact that people are coming from into countries from outside, and that they're outsiders.
Well, I think you're certainly right that there are Roma who are economic migrants, side by side with lots of other folks who are economic migrants. And one of the things you see going on now, I think, is the pattern you see historically. When Roma can come into an area, whether it's going into a new country or just a different part of the country they're from, if they can go in and fill an economic need, they're often tolerated just fine, thank you very much. And again, this is a common experience for migrants. But then if the economy faces a downturn, they're an easy handy scapegoat. And I think there's a little bit of this going on in Italy right now where the economy has turned a little bit. It's not as strong as it was a couple of years ago. And inevitably in those circumstances, folks start to look around and say, well, you know, what are these migrants doing here? I would underscore, though, that while you do have, you know, a fair amount of economic mobility where people are moving around in Europe looking for jobs and sometimes getting jobs, you do have Roma who have moved from one place to another in Europe or outside of Europe because of a well-founded fear of persecution. And I'd go back for just a second and note that in 1997, there was a very large movement of Roma from the Czech Republic to Canada. And then a couple of years later, there was a similar group that went of Roma who went from Hungary to Canada. And my understanding is that roughly a third of those people ultimately did succeed in sustaining an asylum claim. That is to say, they were found by the government of Canada, hundreds and hundreds of people, to have a well-founded fear of persecution. In Germany right now, the last figures I saw were that there were approximately 34,000 Roma from Kosovo who were given a temporary asylum status in Germany after the conflict there. And I think it's very doubtful that whether or not they can safely go back to Kosovo yet. You know, we would love to see the circumstances such that they can go back. But it's a question mark that's really out there for the international community. And then even if they could go back safely, how destabilizing would it potentially be in Kosovo if that has something like a 50% unemployment rate, if suddenly you have tens of thousands of people coming back who also don't have jobs?
We have a caller here, and we'd be happy to take them and other people who are listening. Comments, questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good. 800. It's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. Here is a caller to talk with in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. This is just sort of an informational question. In Scotland, particularly in the British Isles, they're traveling people, otherwise known as tinkers. To what extent are these ethnically similar to Roma, or what's their relation to Roma?
Very good question. The travelers are an ethnically distinct group. They are not related to Roma. They do not speak the same languages or dialects. Like Roma, they face tremendous social exclusion and prejudice, but they are distinct ethnic groups.
Are there also Roma in Britain generally or not?
Yes, there are. I'm afraid I don't have a number to give you, but when Roma came into Europe, it's believed that the earliest geographic place of migration is from the Balkans and then ultimately spreading up through pretty much all of Europe over the course of a couple of centuries. And so ultimately you do have Roma that made their way into to Northern Europe, including Great Britain.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We are a little bit past our midpoint here. Questions are welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. We are talking this morning in this hour with Erica Schlager. She serves as counsel for international law at the United States Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. She follows a number of OSCE and international legal issues, among them the human rights situation of the Romani minority. Someone called it, apparently joined the conversation a little bit late and maybe was a little bit uncertain about who these people were that we're talking about and was interested in a little bit more of a definition. We are indeed talking about a people that, while they are scattered, linguistic analysis and genetic analysis has established the fact that, in fact, we are talking about one distinct people that we think started out a long time ago living in India, and that the various groups of Roma that we have now actually are all descended from this one group of people.
That's right, David. I think there's still, as I said earlier, there's a lot about the history that we need to study more, and this is a very interesting area of study that is developing, and as you may know, there's a Center for Romani Studies at the University of Texas now.
Mm-hmm.
Some European universities now have centers focusing on Romani studies, but it's really very early stages, I think, and there's a lot more we'd like to know. Most of what we do know about the early history of Roma comes from linguistic analysis. Romani is related to Sanskrit. I think the connection to the sub-Indian continent is now not a matter of dispute anymore. That seems very well established. Some of what we believe about the routes of migration come from, again, the study of the languages, where we look at how many loan words there are, and that gives us some insight into what periods of overstays they may have had in places like Greece and Armenia, where there are many loan words in the Romani language. But because the Roma are a dispersed people, you have Roma who have lost the language, and that, of course, is in part because of the forced assimilation in places like Hungary and Spain, and then many variations to the language that have occurred because of the separation in such a vast European region over the centuries.
And we do, as we mentioned at the beginning, that you said it was estimated that living within the EU countries, the belief is there is something between 12 million and 15 million Roma.
Right. And as I said, that's a good ballpark guess. Yeah.
And that, as you mentioned, there are Roma who live in, well, there are Roma who live in the United States, in Canada, in Latin America. So it may be that the numbers are most concentrated in Europe, but there are Roma living all over the world.
Absolutely, all over. We've had the historical record shows that there are Roma who came to the United States even during the colonial period, and it's quite interesting. You know, you can find little tiny pieces of evidence of that very early migration to the United States in Philadelphia, in one of the very oldest sections of Philadelphia. There's a Gypsy Lane, which I think is testimony to the population that may have been there very early on. And certainly, whenever you've had large migrations from Central Europe over the period of our history, Roma have come over with those migrations.
And maybe we should say that, yes, in fact, we are talking about people who have been called gypsies, although that is a term that is not, I don't believe that they favor it, and I'm not sure just how pejorative that is, but that's not the preferred term for the people that we're talking about.
That's right, and certainly American Romani groups have contacted my office to let us know they don't want to be called gypsy, and they prefer the term Roma or Romani, and certainly that's the one that we use. And I can tell you the U.S. government uses that in other places, like on the census and in the Library of Congress and so forth. When you travel around Europe, you will find that there are other terms of self-ascription that are used by Roma. If you're in France, you may hear the term Manouche. In the United Kingdom, there are a number of people who still do use the term gypsy. Some of this gets related to the question of to what extent the Romani language is still being used. In Hungary, where there was very very rough forced assimilation, and the Romani language was lost to a great extent. It's not surprising that Roma there also lost the term from their own language for themselves, and so Roma who've lost the language tend to use the word Tsigan, which is a word you find in many Slavic languages, and it's often translated as gypsy, as opposed to the word for Roma, whereas Roma who've kept the language are more likely to use the word Roma to describe themselves.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with some other folks. Champagne is next. This is line three. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Fascinating program. I'm a professor at the University of Illinois, and I've lost you on occasion 5 to 10 minutes. So I apologize if my questions have already been answered. David, doggone you, you talked about gypsy. I was going to say that since these people came from outside Europe, they were exoticized, and I think the word gypsy comes from Egypt, if I'm absolutely correct. What kind of networks exists between the Romani within Europe and outside of Europe, for example, Canada? Is there any alliance? Is there any head organization that these people can contact? That's my first question. The second is that I'm confirmed insomniac, and I listen to BBC. I do believe I heard within the last week or so that there was a lawsuit brought by Romani in one of the East European countries, which was forcing Romani children to learn the native language rather than to learn their own. And they succeeded in allowing sort of like bilingual education. Let me ask your guest if she has heard of that, and if so, where it is, and if this is going to continue. Are they in such a place where they can bring lawsuits, as here in America, that children be raised bilingually? Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you for asking those questions, and I'm going to try and I think there are sort of two that I'll address separately. One has to do with the network or alliances that Roma have to represent themselves. And I guess the one thing that in answering that, we have to step back and go back to the question that David asked at the beginning of the hour about the conditions in which Roma live. And so if you imagine that many, 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 many Roma are living in absolute abject poverty, for those people, they're not thinking about alliances and networks. They're trying to keep a roof over their head. They're trying to figure out how can I put food before my children tomorrow. Every day of survival is a struggle. A few months ago, I was at a Romani camp out on the outskirts of Athens, where this entire community lives literally on a trash site, and they live there because they engage in their only means of living is to engage in recycling scrap metal, and if you get a ton of scrap metal, you get 20 to 30 euros. It's a horrible existence. And so for many Roma living in those conditions, being able to engage in networks and alliances is simply beyond their means. That said, there are Roma who are middle-class Roma who have gone to university. I mentioned the two Roma members of the European Union Parliament. You do have a network of people who are engaged in advocacy for Roma. There are a couple of transnational Romani organizations, the International Romani Union, and another one based in Europe. Both of them are very active. There is now an organization associated with the Council of Europe in Strasbourg. And I think these are all steps on the road to getting more representation of Romani issues and getting these things raised. And I will say for the Roma who are engaged in this process, the internet is just hugely important because it makes it possible for people to really communicate across borders in a way that you couldn't before the internet. And I think that's a fantastic thing. The Economist did a story recently where they had a subtitle suggesting that Roma, you know, these dispersed population was bound only by music. And my thought was, yeah, music and an extensive network of laptop computers. With respect to the lawsuit question and educational issues, Roma have become much more active in seeking to ensure that their rights are respected through the courts. And there's an organization based in Budapest, Hungary, called the European Roma Rights Center, which focuses a great deal on the question of litigation and working with the transnational organization and works with Roma in a lot of different countries. Now, there are two lawsuits recently that went all the way to the European Court of Human Rights, which is based in Strasbourg. It's a part of the Council of Europe, which brings together almost all the countries of Europe. And it's a high court for Europe on human rights issues. There was a major case that was decided there last year that originated in the Czech Republic, where I believe it was 19 children from a town called Ostrava sued and argued that there was, in effect, segregation, de facto segregation, where children were singled out to go to schools for the mentally impaired without regard to whether that was really an appropriate designation, without regard to proper procedures and getting parental approval and so forth. And it went through the whole process. It went in fits and starts. And in the end, the European Court did rule against the Czech Republic. And a number of people, including myself, view this as coming close to being a Brown versus Board of Education case for Europe. It's extremely important. We've had a little bit of a setback, though, because there was a somewhat similar case from Croatia that the European Court looked at, again, involving singling Roma children out and putting them into separate classrooms. And that in that case, which was decided just a few weeks ago, the European Court gave Croatia a pass, in essence, that there wasn't a violation of the European Convention, there wasn't a violation of the non-discrimination norms. And it's difficult at first blush to figure out how to reconcile those two cases. And because the second case from Croatia is quite new, a lot of folks are still trying to figure out exactly what does that mean. Is there a way to reconcile it, or do we have two contradictory decisions? And so I think the jury is still out on that. With respect to bilingual education, I'm not familiar with the particular case that the caller mentioned where people had sued to have bilingual education. There certainly may be a case like that. But I would say right now, most Roma are not seeking or not making education in the Romani language a priority. My guess is that may come down the road. Right now, in many European countries where Roma have been separated out and given segregated education, where they're simply put in separate classes or given grotesquely substandard education, there is a practice of deeming Roma to be mentally impaired and then putting them into so-called special schools that are substandard. Roma are really fighting tooth and nail to get into the regular classrooms and the regular schools with everybody else. There have been a few places, including the Gandhi School in Pécs, Hungary, where there is a Roma-focused curriculum, and some places where there are classes in the Romani language offered, but I think right now the focus on the part of most Roma is being mainstreamed.
We have about 6-7 minutes left. I have some other callers here we'll get right to, but I do want to introduce again the guest for people who might have just joined us. Erica Schlager is counsel for international law with the United States Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. She's been with the commission since 1987. She follows international legal issues and OSCE issues, among them the human rights situation of the Romani minority, and that's what we're talking about here this morning. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And another caller here. This is someone listening in Urbana, line one.
Good morning, Erica. Let's talk about the contributions the Roma have made to European culture, and in fact, American culture. Django Reinhardt, the great jazz guitarist from Paris, was a Roma. They were the great protectors of the Jews. In fact, the only way the Jews in Eastern Europe in the 19th and 18th century could escape the Pale, the Jewish Pale, was to join the tinkers and traders, the gypsies, and get on the road, and they would go from town to town, and they would pass on information, the oppression of people from one community to another. When the gypsies came into town, you could get some news. They were a news source. If you could address that question. I mean, they were a great cultural contribution. And I'll let you go. Thank you.
All right. You can talk about that if you like.
Sure. Thank you so much. That's a great question. And I think that gets back to the question of teaching about Romani history, which is something that is desperately needed, not only to talk about some of the very tragic experiences I mentioned, the enslavement of Roma and Romania and Moldova, the genocide during the Holocaust, but also to talk about some of these very positive things that the caller just mentioned. There have been a few efforts to do this. I know at one point, for example, in Slovakia, there was a textbook put together that reflected on prominent Roma in Slovak culture. But this is still really, really at the very beginning stages, and I think it's something that governments need to spend much, much more time on. I think some of the efforts have been troubled, if I can put it in that way, because prejudice against Roma is so wide and so deep that even when you have some folks of goodwill who sit down to undertake an exercise like this, it just doesn't always go the way that you might like it to. But it's something that, in terms of looking at, Roma who were involved as serving the military of the countries. I mean, that's something you wouldn't even necessarily think about. But when I came back from Auschwitz last year with a book about Romani experiences, and it included many, many photographs of Roma who were lost during the Holocaust, it was really striking to see how many photographs included pictures of Roma serving in officers' uniforms, in military uniform. So there's so much more that needs to be taught about Roma history, and not only the things that people might immediately think about, like Django Reinhardt and the fabulous musical influences, or the great Polish Romani poet, but even Roma in some areas that are maybe less well known.
All right. We have a time at least for maybe one more caller, someone here calling on a cell phone in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Yes, I was just wondering if the Roma have any particular religion that they more likely tend to.
That's a great question. When Roma came to Europe originally, they were not Christians, and one of the bases of persecuting them was to treat them as heathens. So, in addition to persecuting them as people that looked different, that spoke a impossible to understand language, people that had a different kind of dress, was to persecute them because they weren't Christians in Christian Europe. It does seem that there was greater tolerance, by the way, under the Ottoman Empire. Over the course of many centuries, Roma tended to adopt the religion of the majority community around them. And so what that means is that when you go into Europe, if you are in Turkey, if you are in Bosnia, you will largely find Muslim Roma. If you are in Bulgaria, you will find Turkish-speaking Muslim Roma, as well as Bulgarian-speaking Orthodox Christian Roma. You will find largely Orthodox Roma in Romania and Catholic Roma in Poland and Slovakia. And one of the things that's happened in recent years, I think, is that there has been a real outreach to Romani communities in Europe by evangelizing Christian faiths that have gone into Europe, especially since the 1990s, Western and Eastern Europe. And Roma have, in many instances, really responded very warmly to this. And I think it speaks to the openness on the part of the Romani communities to this kind of outreach. And in a certain sense, almost the surprise, because frankly, you know, in some places, the representatives of majority faiths have not been kind to Roma. I was in Hadarani, Romania, 2 years ago, and that was the site of a terrible, terrible pogrom in 1993, where several Roma were killed and many Roma were burned out of their homes. And I met with survivors of the pogrom there for several hours and really just sat and listened to all the different concerns that they had at that moment. And sort of at the end of half a day of sitting with them, one of the folks there said, you know, and another thing we really want our own church. And I thought, well, that's an interesting request for this guy to make. I wonder what's kind of behind that. It was a very small village. There were two churches visible. One was a Romanian Orthodox church, and the other was a Hungarian church because there was a Hungarian minority there. And I later learned, when I talked to other people about this, that when the pogrom occurred in 1993, the Orthodox priest would not bury the Roma dead in the church cemetery. And I think when you have experiences like that, it's very tragic. It really is.
Hmm. We're coming to the point where we essentially have to finish, and my apologies, we have one caller here that I can't take. As a way of finishing up, if we asked, I asked way at the beginning of the program by the various measures that governments use to try to determine people's well-being, I said, well, you know, how are the Roma doing? And the answer is not well. However, are you at all encouraged, particularly by, let us say, Roma efforts to organize politically themselves to fight for human rights, their human rights, and the interest of various kinds of governmental or non-governmental organizations to try to help in that? Does that give you some reason for optimism if we ask some question about how do we think the Roma will be doing, 10 years from now?
Well, I have to say I'm very optimistic. I guess partly because I'm a glass half full kind of person. But when I look back to stuff that was going on 15 years ago, there were so few people condemning these things. So you had pogroms, you had Roma being stripped of citizenship, you had walls being built, all kinds of, you had significant numbers of racially motivated murders. And I think our office, we felt a little bit alone, being one of the few voices raising these things. And it's not the same today. It's not to say that you don't have some very serious problems going on. I think the events in Italy recently where Romani campsites were torched by very ugly mobs is quite alarming. But the reaction you got to that today is different as night and day as it was, when I compared it to, say, the 1993 pogrom in Romania, which was met by, broad silence in many ways. Part of what's changed is that you do have the internet. You can't do stuff like that and not have it show up in the papers the next day or be emailed around. Part of it is the growing awareness of the issues. Part of it is the tremendous Romani movement. When I was in Vienna 2 weeks ago for a meeting on Romani issues, there was a protest there where Roma, dozens of Roma stood up at one point with anti-ethnic profiling T-shirts on. There's a presence that the way in which Romani organizations bring these issues to the table today is fantastic. And so I feel if there is as much progress and improvement in the next 15 years as I have seen in the last 15 years, it's going to be great.
All right. There, we're going to have to leave it. Our guest, Erica Schlager, is counsel for international law with the U.S. Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. And by the way, if you'd like to find out more about the commission, look at their website. It's csce.gov. Ms. Schlager, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This program, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Bodywork Associates offers 4 area locations, including one on the lower level of the Illini Union at the Oasis. That's it for us on Focus. Up next, though, much more news, features, other things, another interview, all as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll take a look at the universe of children's entertainment, TV shows. shows, DVDs, and more. Our guest at 106 will be Dade Hayes. He is the author of Anytime Playdate. He will join us at 106. Let's take a look now at commodity prices in Kansas City. September wheat trading at 824.5, up 8. December 848, up 7.25. In Chicago, September wheat 795.5, up 7.75. December 819.5, up 8.25. September corn 574, up 1. December 592.75, up 3/4. March 613, up 1.75. May 627.5, up 3.75. August soybeans 1383, down 2. September 1370.5, down 2.5. November 1368.5, down 4.5. January 1388, down 2.75. August meat.